Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome back to the Straight Spirit Podcast. I am Lily, your host and psychic medium. Thank you for clicking on this episode. I so appreciate your love and support. First-time listeners, you're always welcome here. I beg you to come with an open mind. My goal isn't to convince you of anything, but purely to just give my psychic insights and the messages that I'm receiving. Put them out there, unedited, unfiltered, unless otherwise stated, and just let you make up your own mind about them. But welcome, loves. Thank you for being here. Feel free to share this podcast. It would mean the world. I'm also on Instagram and all these other social media platforms. If you want to check them out, personal readings are available. So we've got an interesting one tonight. If you ever hear me speaking a little quietly, it's because it's the middle of the night, so it is late or early, whatever. It's usually a good time for me to focus on what spirit is telling me. So yes, interesting reading. With this one, I actually have very little information. I think I know three things about this case. A lovely, lovely person sent me a message that just has the missing person's name, the year they went missing, 1982, and the person that they have charged with her disappearance or suspected crime, I suppose, if he's been charged. I actually don't know anything about this case. I will always say if I do, I'll even let you know when I've Googled or when I'm about to. I have not Googled anything. I've just got the name, the year she went missing, and that her husband is the one that they've charged, who apparently denies everything. That's all I got in the message. And they just said, what do you think about this? So I thought, well, this is a great way to air out some information for this lovely soul, for this lovely spirit, shed some light and clarity, and a good opportunity for me to flex my psychic abilities. And it's quite interesting. A lot of the readings I get where I'm told literally like nothing, hardly anything, they come through really, really well, and I'm able to produce, have been able to produce some great readings from zero information. So I have a friend who loves to give me zero context. He's like, I'm not going to tell you anything, just see what you can see. And it's actually a lot of fun. So without further ado, let's get into the reading. So this awesome, lovely, lovely soul, and I can feel her with me. She's got a very different energy to Gwen and even Toya, who I read for earlier. Of course, they're not all going to be the same just because they've suffered a terrible fate. But I just find it interesting that they come through so clearly and so differently. So I can feel personality very strongly, even though once spirit merges, they all become one and the same energy and light. They come through with their personalities, because the reading would be quite useless if they didn't identify who they were or make it relevant for the people listening and the family of their family and loved ones. So yeah, she's got a very different energy. So her name, oh, of course, I have to state, this is all alleged. I'm not meaning to accuse anyone or anything. It's just what I'm bringing through. So I'm going to get images in my mind, sounds, words, like literally everything you can think of, even everything in my physical environment is a message. And now there is one thing that came up earlier in my physical environment that I think that this lovely lady wishes me to talk about during this reading. So I've got that ready to go here. Yeah, she's giving me a nod. She said she's ready. Okay. This awesome person's name is really unique, and I almost want to say it looks like it's pronounced like Roslyn with an X. R-O-X-L-Y-N, Bowie. Disappeared in 1982. She's never been found. Her husband today charged with her disappearance, but denies he did anything. So I wonder if they got DNA or something for it to be that long, and they charged him today. But anyway, she wants me to go back to her name. I want to call her Roxy or Rox, or she's talking to me about Roxanne, that song by Sting. I wonder when that came out, because she's referencing that. Of course, I suppose, even though the spirit merges, they still are up to date with all the popular songs. What a cool name, though. I really think that's a very unique name, and I think it was the star of the show, so to speak. I think it was a real talking point. Whether it was negative or positive speak, I think it was spoken about a lot, or it was, I'm seeing like badge of honor, you know. I would be surprised. She said she liked her nickname, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was Roxy, Roxanne, Rox, something like that, or even Rocky. But she says badge of honor, so I don't think this was a case where someone was like, oh, I hate the name. I don't feel that, to be honest. So to clarify, I know nothing else about this case. I'm just going to tune in and see what happens and just see what comes out. She's sitting by me quite demurely. When I say that, she's got her hands like palm to palm in between her legs, like towards her knees, and her legs are together, and her hands are like arrowed into her between her knees. Very demure, submissive body language. She appears to me to have like shorter brunette or dark hair. Could be black, may have highlights, but she also showed me before I started this recording, I was seeing that there's this it's like a cartoon character or somebody, a woman who had like really high, like 60s, it wasn't beehive, but it was like ridiculously high, you know how cartoons accentuate and exaggerate. And she was showing me like big hair. So I don't know if at one stage of her life she had big long hair, or even her hair was short but big, and maybe she cut it as she got older, but she's just referencing big hair. And it was the 80s, so there may have even been a perm or two. I am seeing gold highlights, I think. Maybe she dyed her hair if she had the opportunity to. She's kind of telling me they didn't have a lot of... she's saying, referencing not having enough money for luxuries. Oops, sorry, just bumped the mic there. Okay. She is coming across as very reserved, but I think that was a symptom of her marriage. I want to say marriage, not just relationship. I feel like when she was younger, when she was a little girl, possibly, or a teen, whenever she got some freedom, she really flourished. And I feel like she was quite boisterous when she was younger around her girls, like her, I don't know if she had sisters or her best buds or something. There was just a time, I don't know if she was singing or listening to music, but there was something that she did, and I can see her dancing around really carefree. I'm seeing shorter hair then as well. I can just Roxy, Rox, like almost like a rock star. I'm hearing Pat Benatar. When did Pat Benatar come out? Maybe that's the kind of hair she had. I think she really liked her style. But you wouldn't get that from looking at her as a wife. She, like, demure is going to keep coming up. I can see her in, like, one of those 80s sitcom sweaters. Very bland looking, very plain. She wasn't, though. I have to be clear, that wasn't who she was at her core. She had so much light and excitement, like she just longed for an exciting life at a younger age. I feel like a lot of that left as she got older, and I feel like she's saying she tried to talk to her husband about it, and she tried to express herself, when they maybe when they first met, or to others, but it feels like he wasn't interested. It was like, I hear flights of fancy. It's like, oh yeah, this isn't, I don't feel like he was the, well, this person she's talking to was the kind of person who would say, oh honey, whatever you want to do, you can do it. You know, I'm thinking of that movie, Julie and Julia, and there's that awesome scene with Julia Child, and she's sitting at the restaurant in the movie eating with her husband. And it's like a really, it really tickles you, that scene. It's so delightful, the way that they giggle and play with each other, like playfully. I mean, they're in a restaurant, people, like, keep it clean. although Morticia and Gomez did make out in an auction house, I saw in their movie. Anyway, and Julia Child is trying to think of what she can do, played by Glenn Close, and then her partner is, you know, he understands that all the options she's giving her are not fitting for her. He knows her, in and out. He knows what she wants to do. And she said, well, what I really am good at is eating. And then he's like, you're so good at it. And then they laughed and laughed and laughed. And it's so funny. So he just totally and completely supports her dream. He doesn't go, that's ridiculous, you look ridiculous, which is, I think, going to be a common theme here. I don't think that Roxy, or Rox, there's a nickname in there somewhere. I don't think she got that kind of support. And she's talking about her family as well. I really feel like there is somebody in her life who just kept pushing her back into the marriage. Like, if she went to someone with her with a transgression or a complaint, or demand. Oh no, not demand. You know, like, you go to a company and you've got something that it's like D, but transgression, a D word and transgression. it's like there's an issue, there's a problem. I think if she went to somebody with that problem, this particular person, maybe her mother, or a grandmother, or her father's mother, or somebody, would just push her back into it. You know, her complaints would fall on deaf ears, most for the most part. And she said her husband certainly was deaf. She's like donging him on the head. Not literally, I don't think she did. If she ever did, I feel like it was self-defense. But she's, you know, playfully, you know, like a cartoon. She's really referencing cartoons. I don't know if she watched a lot of Bugs Bunny or something. But, you know, she's donging him with a cartoon frying pan. Like, just completely deaf to her needs and her wants. And I can see him with his back turned to her, which usually in a reading that indicates to me that, and denotes to me that his attention is elsewhere. I'm not necessarily saying women at this stage, it's just that he's not looking at her in this interaction. She said he didn't give a damn. You know, she said she could have been told him she wanted to dress up as an elephant in a pink tutu and play a rock guitar. And he just wasn't taking any notice. But when he did, he certainly wouldn't be as supportive as Julia Child's husband was in the movie. And of course, we've got to be mindful that in movies they embellish and they over-exaggerate real-life couples, of course. Much like with the Warrens episode. If you didn't listen to that yet, it's the one before this. The couple that... who were paranormal investigators in the real Conjuring cases, the Conjuring movie, the real cases, the paranormal investigators, Ed and Lorraine Warren. I did an episode about their legitimacy before this one, so go check it out. I'd love to have more people listen, but I'd love to hear your thoughts if you want to send them to straightspirit1@gmail.com. Okay. So she is showing me herself pregnant, and it appears like to be quite a big baby belly. So I would got one or two children, or she nearly had two but had one. It's like one almost didn't make it, because I'm seeing one full belly, and then one sort of not yet. So I don't know if she had children. It feels, I would say that she did, or she was wanting to be a mother. She's just showing me a big belly, and it feels like it's full term or close to it. And then there's another on the side. Okay. She's pointing the finger. She said, "You did it." Not me, of course, but she's pointing at somebody. She's got a tissue in her hand. And she's like, rather than crying, she's actually well pissed. Now, I have to say, Spirit is never angry. Spirit is completely at peace. But for the sake of this reading, to talk about what's going on, she's coming through with quite a strong emotion. Which is a big change from her demure self that she was showing earlier. I actually wonder if she's speaking about the accusations on this particular person. Let's see. I really want to call her Roxy. And I feel like she did have a female's ear, a sister or a friend. There was one person she's showing me she could really talk to, or really try to talk to. And I think sometimes she couldn't talk exactly about everything. Especially things that went on in the bedroom. I think there she kept her mouth shut about certain things. Or with their intimacy in their relationship. Or like, for instance, if that her husband was messing around, I don't know that she particularly spoke about certain issues to do with that. There's something here she's not telling. She could tell this person everything, but she didn't always tell them everything. The truth, she's saying. Denied the truth. I suppose it's entirely possible that if she was in a poor marriage, like a bad marriage, and she refused to see it. I mean, of course, there are people who are like that, who make excuses for people who are horrible to them. So, but to clarify, I have not looked deeply into their marriage or anything. This is just what's come up on a surface level. So she's pointing a finger, she's going, "You," and she's like angry, she's pissed off. She's showing herself going wild, and like, this is after the fact, this is not during what happened to her. It's like she's attacking the person who did this to her. Let me just ask her some questions. I'm going to go quiet for a minute. She's just so mad. I think that certain parts of her life were taken away from her. She I would say she is merged with Spirit. Of course, it seems obvious, but sometimes people who are still alive and in physical, their energy comes through much like Spirit's energy. So I just wanted to clarify. I would say that she is... I keep wanting to use the word deceased, and that's not a word that I use, so it must be something to do with her case. Is there some question about whether she's gone or not? I mean, of course, if she's only missing, then I think people would be able to say, you know, there's shadow of doubt, you know, she's just left, she's run away. She said, "That's not it, I didn't do that, we'll never leave." She's talking about her baby, so I really think she was pregnant, or if she didn't, or had kids, if she didn't have children, which I feel would be quite unique for that era. If she didn't have children of somebody else's, but I feel like she said, "My babies." Excuse me. I feel like she's she's got quite a temper, but I don't think it meant mattered. She feels quite powerless. I don't know if she was slight or if she just, being a woman, against her husband, or I get the feeling of someone who was really mad but couldn't do anything about it. I see her at home, just like shock and awe about like a disbelief that she's being treated this particular way, and he's just gonna get away with it. I think that goes not just with whatever happened to her, but with her marriage too. I think I spoke about this in Gwen's case. It's like the difference between these victims of domestic abuse and domestic violence who, it's like, of course, it's not only women, but in this case, I'm speaking of women who feel like their hands are tied and they wouldn't think about permanently harming somebody because they heavily consider the consequences of that. Whereas the men in these cases don't. They have these sorts of egos where, I might be able to get away with it, or I might get away with it, and that's enough for them. And so, it just is. It's like the difference between the two people in the relationship. One goes right there, and one is willing to do those horrendous things, and the other person is would never even dream of it. That's what I want to say. She said, "I wouldn't dream of it." She said she wished she did, though. She showed me a ring on her finger, but it looks like it's on her right hand. Is that on your right hand? I don't know if she had took her wedding ring off and put it on her right hand, or it's I was saying like it's her wedding ring, but it looks like it's on her right hand. Or maybe with weight loss and stress, she couldn't get it on her left finger, or she gave it to somebody else. Like for instance, if she had a daughter or something, but I don't know if she would have done that. Given it to somebody else. There was just a female energy that popped up there. It's very much like flashcards or charades. Seeing a flashcard for a few seconds and having to memorize all the details. Tell me more about the ring, love. I think she might still have it, to be honest. Okay. I did hear her say buried with her, but I'll look a little bit deeper into that. Okay. I just see her in disbelief at the spectacle of him, of her husband. It's very, very different to Gwen's energy. While it could be similar, it really feels like Roxy. Call her Roxanne when her name is not that. She's just sort of sitting back in disbelief, like unable to do anything, but having to take it all in. And like I said, this is a theme throughout their relationship, I think. She said, "Had everyone fooled?" I do see him out at a club or something, messing with others, messing with other women, or others. Maybe then it's not just women. She's like, "Could you imagine if I did something like that?" She said, "Holy Jesus, holy Lord," she said, "Lord. He'd lose his bloody mind." And he did. And yet this is where she's up in arms. He's allowed to go out like philandering and doing all this stuff, and I have to just sit here and take it. I can't do anything. You know, she's talking about men being able to beat on their wives or being able to manhandle or roughhouse, but obviously not in a playful way, be rough with their wives, and wives can't do it back. You know, there really is a difference in a balance of power here. I see him as quite, I want to say strapping. Maybe he was told he was a strapping lad as he was growing up, or a strapping young man. I don't know what he looks like now. He may, in his old age, be shrinking or looking smaller, I should say. But I think in his prime, he was quite a wide-shouldered, bigger man, at least much bigger than her, like width-wise and strength-wise. Like, I get the sense of a grizzly bear claw, one swipe and she was down kind of thing, or could be down. I'm going to go on a limb here and say that there was abuse in the relationship, because... at least mental abuse and more, because what lovely Roxy told me earlier to talk about was a domestic violence hotline. So months ago, I ordered a stack of flyers or pamphlets from the national, it's called 1-800-RESPECT. It's a national domestic violence hotline. And I ordered a stack of promotional material just to hand out and put in people's mailboxes and stick up on local notice boards just in case someone needed that access to that information. I took them to the library and all that. And as I've been cleaning out the spare room, I found, just in the main thoroughfare of the house, randomly, I found one of these cards sitting out on the floor. It obviously fallen out of its box, and it wasn't there earlier this morning. But I did notice it after I read this question about Roxy. It was sitting there, and I thought, okay, that's probably relevant for this next readings I'm going to do. So I picked it up, and then about half hour later, I noticed another one. So I thought, okay, that's definitely something she wants to talk about. And so as I'm going through this reading, I'm starting to sense a theme here. She said her and Gwen have a lot in common. So if you haven't listened to the Gwen Grover episodes, there's two, part one and two. Just go scroll through a little bit through my episodes if you like, and you can listen there. I feel like it's important that these women speak, because I don't think they were well heard and physical. But of course, they're at peace now. They're not like hanging for revenge. Any justice that's served is, I heard swift, but it doesn't do anything for them. It's more for the people who they've left behind in physical. So let me just read through this card really well. I think she wants me to. So 1-800-RESPECT.org.au, that's the Australian website. America and your country, wherever you're from, will have your own hotline. They're completely anonymous. So this is the National Sexual Assault Domestic Family Violence and Counseling Service. So whichever country you're in, or if you're in a country that doesn't have it, for instance, you can, I'm sure, find resources. Do it safely if you can. If you think, even suspect, like, is this what's happening to me? Just talk to them and they'll tell you. And they often have special case workers. Like, this isn't something where they're going to come to somebody's house or anything like that. No, it's all anonymous. Sometimes they do take your information for continuity, I think. But, you know, if it's a particularly severe case or instance of abuse, then they will put it through to their special case people. And they'll speak to you over the phone anonymously, if you like. And they will give you some advice, resources. They will educate you about what you're going through, and they will be a sympathetic and listening ear. And she said, she's pointing at this card and she's saying, I never had that. I never had that. This is a wonderful service, and she wishes more people would use it. She said, use it. Use it if you need it. Use it. She's saying they're not only talking about physical abuse, It's mental, it's financial, it's coercion. She's talking about battered spouses. And I think that's an old term. I don't think that's a modern term. I think that's probably from way back when. She's also talking about, for those in Australia, there is an app called Daisy for connecting women. Daisy is a free app that easily connects you to a wide range of support services in your state and local area. So if you're interested in that, you can go to 1-800-RESPECT.org.au/Daisy, D-A-I-S-Y, or you can search Daisy in the App Store or in Google Play. Counseling, for sure. She likes the daisies on there. She would have picked a more colourful flower, I think, but the daisy is important for some reason. I don't know if she had children, if one of her children drew her flowers or gave her daisies or a particular sort of flower. But there's like daisy or flower in her children. Okay. So yeah, wherever you're from, if you need help, reach out to these proper services who know what they're doing. There's no reason, she's saying, for anyone to suffer in silence anymore. It's just not an excuse. And even for the people who are unaware of what they're going through, you know, if you're aware of somebody who's in this situation, try to safely get these resources to them in a space where their partner or person is not going to find it. Stick it in the mailbox for them to find. Stick it in their car. She's talking about the car windscreen. When they're away from the offender, like. She's saying even then the journey's not done, but it's a start. It's a start. If we can start educating people, empowering people, helping them understand what a good relationship is, she said that's so important, because she's gone are the days, she said, with this bullshit where people are taught that a little abuse and a little arguing is natural for a relationship. She said that's bullshit. That's not what makes a marriage. Because she's saying, I could see now, she's saying from her perspective, she can see so many peaceful, happy, loving marriages like Julia Child and her husband in that movie, or Jamie and Claire on Outlander as an example. Of course, there is a scene where he like flogs her on the bottom, and I'm not ignoring that, but you're probably like, what is she talking about? But, you know, she said the one key thing, and Morticia and Gomez, she said the one key thing in those relationships is that these spouses are willing to work together, and they're willing to change and grow together, and they're each other's best friends, and they back each other, and they know each other's dreams inside out. She said she never had that. She never had that. It wasn't even, it's like you call him husband, but he wasn't playing the husband role. And she said she could barely be a wife to him. She tried, but it just wasn't good enough. You know, she's like, I'm doing all these stupid wifely duties, you know, the cooking or the cleaning, whatever. I'm doing what my mother did, or I'm doing what I was told I was supposed to do, or what I was shown I was supposed to do. And it's not making him happy. So what the fuck do I do now? You know, it must be me. You know, when he's mad at her, I see her really going within and blaming herself, because those are probably the words that he used against her. Okay. She's telling me to shake it out. Loosen up. Relax. Okay, Roxy, what do you want to say, darling? What do you want to say, love? I feel like she never got that. Like, she didn't feel heard. She didn't feel listened to. There was one person that listened, maybe. Maybe a co-worker, as a female, young female, younger, not super young though, not teenage, I'd say like around late 20s, 30s, possibly mid 30s, the highest age for her. But you know, for women in those situations, and men, whatever, whoever, you know, they get so used to people not listening to them. They get so used to people not asking. And I'm getting the sense of people who sense that abuse is afoot and distance themselves because they don't want to be in danger. And I'm getting the sense that a lot of people were in denial about her situation. I don't think anyone suspected that she would go missing. I feel like that was quite a shock, except to one person, obviously, maybe two. Whoever disappeared her might have had help, but I had to, again, that was a quick flash of information. She's given me a movie intro. You know how you come into an old retro movie in a way and they're like, it was summer of 69 or something. The weather was hot or the weather was fine and the town was sleepy. Or like there was like this over this narration of like they set the scene with the weather, the year and the time. But she's showing her herself smoking and she's like, and it was shit. Like, and things had just gone to shit. At the end of that narration, I saw Peggy Bundy with the hair, and she also showed me Fran Drescher. Now obviously she went missing well before those ladies graced the screen, but the one thing they all have in common is the big hair. So I don't know if she liked big hair, she had it, or she wanted it, but there's just big hair throughout this whole thing. And then I'm also seeing hair like Pat Benatar. So it's going to be interesting to see a photo of her. Of course, it could be just a reference to the 80s. Of course. Although I suppose she could have just shown me Boy George or George Michael, which I am seeing now. So maybe the hair thing is just about the time. Because everyone, you know, the 80s is synonymous with big hair. So I'm getting a feeling like it's a real shame what happened, but nobody knew what happened, so they couldn't say that. As a real disappearance, she said, of Swift. She's saying only her and her attacker or the perpetrator, the person who did away with her, know what happened, but everyone else was like, what? Where did she go? Did she run away? Was she taken? And people seemed quite clueless, but there were a select few who had their suspicions, I think. I could count them on one hand, but there's more than two. There are people who were close to them that had their suspicions. Could also be law enforcement. I get that he is quite stern, just like a real, I want to say humbug, not a fun person to be around. Thinks he's funny, but he doesn't realize people aren't really laughing at his jokes. It's like a courtesy laugh. And he thinks he's being a comedian all-star. I see her rolling her eyes at him. She saw right through him in regard to that. I feel like she was really stuck in this shitty marriage. And I think there are a few times where at least she, maybe both, tried to make a go of it. You know how toxic relationships, they blow apart and then they come back together. Oh, you know, we can't divorce, or we can't this, or I don't want to try that yet. Let's try again. And then it's, I remember why I fell in love with you. And then it's explosion. Something else happens. And it's like this continuous concertina. You know, there's like an accordion coming together and pulling apart, coming together, pulling apart. And then towards the end of it, it was like all the way apart to the extent, pardon me, that the accordion was nearly broken in half. As a metaphor or analogy for the relationship, broken in half. I feel like he was seeing at least one other person and she knew about it. But I feel like he had been before. But this time was different because I suspect maybe he wanted this one to move in on, gosh, I almost said Lynn. This kind of reminds me of, oh, you know the other lady that went missing? Oh, it was the podcast. Lynn, let me see. I think I should be able to Google that podcast. That should be fine because I'm not Googling the lady in the case. Lynn Dawson, that's it. It almost has undertones of that, which is an interesting thought. It's like, but I kind of feel like rather than moving her in adjacent to Roxy, I feel like it's a butting Roxy out. And I feel like I would say to police, as they probably have already, to talk to whoever he was seeing. I'm getting one main one and then like others he'd slept with. And Roxy like feeling left out in the cold. But I always wonder if she refused to go or if she was making demands. So it was easier to disappear her. Now I'm also asking myself whether, like wondering whether he had access to vast land. Was he a hunter? Did he go hunting? This isn't something that I picked up necessarily. It's just something that I pondered as I thought of. I suppose it's all psychic. But I do, it makes me wonder if he had access to wide lands, like a cattle station or like a farmland or something, but like huge, vast, like almost as if he was a hunter or went hunting recreationally and knew places to go. And I understand that seems ridiculously obvious. It's like, why wouldn't the police already searched all of that if he was a hunter? Or, you know, if he was a fisherman, the ocean. Goodness knows back then, you know, I don't know that they... I can't imagine that she would have been easy to find if she was... Oh, God, I want to say disposed of, but that's not a word I would choose. But in the ocean, you know, I don't know how police would track that back then. Like if he was an adept fisherman. It just feels like he knew where to go or how to do something. If he was a hunter, he knew how to dismantle. You know what I'm saying there. I keep feeling like there's someone else around him, like someone who's complicit. I don't know if they had a hand in it, but they definitely knew about it, or he said something. Maybe more than one person, because it sort of feels like, at first I felt like it was a male, a younger male, and then, or like an adult though, like a friend or a young brother, but it sort of feels like a friend. I could see his face. But then in this case, I also see a female, which could be the lady he was seeing. I'm hearing the word complicit. She said everyone thought I was missing, but he knew where I was. He knows where I am. I feel like he hit her on the head. She's saying hit on the head. So, I'm seeing him hit her on the head with the butt of a gun, like a rifle. So, of course, I don't know if that's symbolic or literal or... like because it was quieter, because people might be like, well, why wouldn't he just shoot her? But of course the noise. I feel like this person was quite calculated even if it was a heat of the moment thing, I think this person is quite smart. And I'm hearing him sort of say or feel that she's easy to move around and dispose of. I keep hearing that word dispose. I would never say that about a person. So this isn't obviously my energy. Like remarking on how easy it is to move her around and do all that because she's so small compared to him, or slight compared to him. Like, of course, she may have been bigger than other women or, like, whatever, but to him, smaller. Got away with it, I'm hearing. Got away with it. It's interesting. I'm feeling the rocking of a boat, but I'm also feeling like it's the rocking of a car. It's peculiar because there's two different avenues. So I don't know whether he dumped some part of it in the ocean and then there were other parts out in the bush, or like maybe disposed of the weapon out in the bush and put Roxy to rest in the ocean. I just heard Dew Bones float. If someone's asking that question. She's definitely saying that he chose somebody else. Even if it was another life. She's talking about being put out to pasture like an old cow. Oh. I think she got to the point where she wouldn't play dead anymore. Like, she wouldn't just. She got tired of it. But I also sense her being, like, put more and more into submission. Submission. Like, there's no point in fighting. There's no point in arguing. He's just going to do what he wants to do. This almost tracks with the Ed and Lorraine Warren, allegedly, of course, their thing where I think Ed also had somebody else. And he moved her in, and the Rangers had to deal with it. So, God, was this a common theme back then? Like, God, couldn't imagine. I don't know if it was me who wants to say to her, or she's saying to herself, like, it wasn't her fault. There was nothing she could have done. It was not her fault. Although I really feel like, I could see her watching him in his sleep and like wanting to, you know, get him then out of anger. But there's that flights of fancy word again. Let me get some clarity on this. Hang on. Oh, she's saying shooting daggers at him with her eyes while he's sleeping, and that was about as out of line or as powerful as she got. He gave her nothing, she had nothing. And people might be like, well, he bought her a house, or he did this and he gave her money, but that's not all a marriage constitutes. I don't know if police have found a weapon and they've been able to find DNA on it, but I'm seeing a rifle. I'm seeing a weapon. It could be a knife. Could be both. In different locations. Roxy, was it your husband who disappeared you? She said, yes, that's right. I asked if she was murdered, and she said, unfortunately, yes. She said, don't worry, I'm at peace now, but She said, I could have been a rock star. And she's talking about her childhood dreams. Whatever dreams they were, if it wasn't a rock star, it was like a ballet. No, she's like rock and roll. Feeling Pat Benatar again. She's talking about being with children. I'm seeing a boy and a girl. I don't know if they're her children. She said, I'm with the children. And she's standing with Gwen and Toya, which is quite powerful, as you can imagine. And she's saying, they're all saying in unison, this doesn't have to happen anymore. I can stop this. She's like, no one else needs to pass because of this. Because of cowardly men who feel powerful with a cowed woman. Cowed, like, submissive woman. Coward. Cowering. Yeah, not coward like no guts. Cowering like a shaking puppy dog. I feel like there's common themes through all three readings. She's talking about her dresser. I don't know if it had like doilies on top of it, or there's like in the left-hand top drawer, or in like the top drawer on the left-hand side. She's showing me like a hanky, or a, like that linen doily kind of material. I can see the holes in it. And there's something wrapped in it. I don't know if that's where, like rings or jewelry, a necklace maybe. Well, she may have kept like a butterfly pin in it from her grandmother, or something, like something significant that she kept in a drawer. Gosh, it could even be a hanky with a butterfly on it, I suppose. That's a lot. I know that's very general. But I am seeing like two gold rings or two earrings. So maybe he's got the rings. But she did say she had hers with her. Okay. I feel like she's saying they got him on a technicality. There's something he didn't think of because of the era. Like, obviously back then, DNA wasn't a huge thing, I don't think. Even now, there's some speculation about it. It's like he couldn't, there's something he couldn't have fathomed, and I feel like that might be DNA, or something that police have, why do I want to say police? Police, in that weird way. I'm hearing pearl and diving. Pearl knife, like an abalone knife. Like a clam knife, oyster shuck. Yeah, I know. You know how they go down the bottom of the ocean and they use the knife to pop off the abalone or the clams from the bottom? That's weird flash there. I can see a diving suit collecting the pearl. I'm also hearing reference to like Jack Sparrow's ship, the Pearl, being like his most prized possession. There's a lot of ocean symbolism in here, and hunting. So I don't know if he was a fisherman, a hunter, or he had access to a lot of land or water, or like a boat. Or like he had a charter business or a yacht business, something. Yeah, there's something he couldn't account for because it wasn't even fathomed of back then. It could be the changing of the stories. It could be a colonial inquest. You know, often if they can't find, like with Lynn, even though they don't know where she is, they can still charge whoever was involved, her partner in that case. So I wonder if it's like that. Okay. She's telling me, Roxy is telling me that her remains are all over. She said all over, because I was asking, where are you? Where are you buried? Or where are you? Where are you? She said all over. So I get a sense of land and ocean, or land and river. And of course, if they live in the northern part of Australia or in a part of America, I feel like it's Australia, or a part of America where, you know, there are crocodiles or alligators, Australia where there's crocodiles. Oh gosh, you know, if you knew the right place, you know, I know that's a terrible thought, but it's popping up, so I've got to speak about it. Sharks, I mean, sharks are everywhere, so. I do feel like there was some thought put into, like, remember how I said, do bones float? I feel like there was some scientific question as to what would happen with her after they, like, did away with her, I would say. Okay, Roxy, do you have anything else you want to add? I do feel like whoever was dating him at the time knew, or had strongly suspected, and she said she knew. They knew. She said she wore pink. I don't know, when she was a teenager, if there's a photo of her. I can see with a bright, like, magenta or bright pink shirt. Or it could even be like black leather with pink. Is that something she wore? And like even a tutu frill? You know how some... Oh, I'm thinking of Madonna. I have Madonna sitting in that... There's a picture of Cyndi Lauper sitting in like a tutu, and she's got all the bells and whistles on that they wore in the 80s. But with Roxy, I'm getting like a bright pink shirt. Not fluoro pink, like a darker but bright pink. It's like solid pink. Oh, what pink? Oh, darker than the pink ladies. So, like, I'm thinking of the pink ladies from Greece now. So I don't know if she liked that movie too. Well, she was fancying herself. She said she liked Rizzo. She never much was into Sandy. I feel like she liked Rizzo. And the one that that gets plastic surgery and is dating all the Marines. Gosh, she's like, you wouldn't think it to look at me. I'm so different to that now. She was. Okay. She's referencing a photo. I don't know if it looks very much like the Cyndi Lauper photo, or it's like such an 80s photo of her with pink and black, possibly. Could be a dress-up thing, or like a teenage years thing, costume. Okay. Of course, people in the 80s didn't do costumes of the 80s, I suppose. Don't know why I just heard Roxy Hart. That reminds me of that movie, Never Been Kissed. Oh. You know, that's a movie with Drew Barrymore. And she goes back as an adult to school. And she's out of place because she's referencing older things and dressing in older fashion. Lucy Goosey. She's talking about the dress that Drew Barrymore wore in that movie, where she is like the blue one with, they call it tulle. Tulle, you know that, they always used to wear it back then. there might be that in that photo or video. Does she wear it on her wedding day? It's like all that thick netting kind of material. Is that tulle? Okay. I just see her with her arms around these two children, a girl and a boy. I do sense jail time for her husband. I feel like they've got some quite good evidence. Obviously, they wouldn't bring him in after all this time if they didn't. Or maybe they're trying to make him sweat. But I did hear the sound. She showed me the sound of a jail cell closing, like the clink, in the clink. But she said it doesn't feel like justice because it's been so long. What's the point? She's almost like, what's the point? I think, is there some question as to whether he's been killing this entire time? She's making me feel like it was a personal vendetta for her. And like she's like, don't get me wrong, if he felt like he needed to, he would have. But yeah, she's making me feel like she was the one big case, air quotes. Because of the disappearance factor. I feel like other people, if he wanted to disappear, like a man that he was socially involved in, I think people would care less in a way, or not because he's a man, but because maybe that person didn't have a family. Maybe that person was just a wanderer, or maybe that person was a criminal or something, and so it's not unusual. But when she went missing, it was like I heard up in arms. It was really shocking. And I can hear him like talking to the news and playing it up. Okay, you know what, guys? I'm really feeling strongly like I should do some research on this case now. So thank you so much for listening. All my love. I may come back and let you know what I find. But take care, guys. Thank you for listening. Stay safe.